It's The Bill Murphy Show. A daily one-on-one 30-minute interview featuring people from all walks of life. Available daily at BillMurphyShow.com. And now, here's your host, Bill Murphy.
And this is your digital broadcast for Monday, August 9th, 2010. We get into another week of shows. Thanks again, everybody, for listening. The loyal listeners are growing every single day, and the momentum continues to grow. Brought to you, as always, by Lulu's Bait Shack. Lulu's, fresh Florida seafood, live music, and gigantic fishbowl drinks located in Beach Place on A1A in the heart of Fort Lauderdale Beach, a proud sponsor of The Bill Murphy Show. Royalty in the house today as we welcome in the mayor of the city of Sunrise, Florida, Roger Wishner, and he's in person in the studio. Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule to join me on the show, Raj.
Yeah, it's great to be here, Bill.
It's okay if I call you Roger? I feel like addressing you as mayor, because that's the way you're supposed to do it, right?
Well, in my house, it's called Roger or Dad, one or the other.
You're in campaign time right now, right? I'm going to start right off the bat and saying that, you know, when re-election time comes up and you get into campaigning, I would imagine the first thing I think of is, wow, do these guys even have time to do their mayoral duties if you're so tied up in actual campaigning? Is it taking away from the time you need to spend working on the city?
Not really. I mean, my responsibility as the mayor is to, oversee the operations of the meetings and as well as attend functions on behalf of the city. So, you know, it does somewhat impede, but, you know, you just got to make the time. I mean, I spend a lot of time out there with the people and trying to resolve issues. I mean, whether it's something to do with crime or whether it's a problem with a street or landscaping or code enforcement. So, you know, I put a lot of time because, I really care about my community and I care about the people in that live in Sunrise.
And I'm sure you have a staff put together that helps you with the campaign, but the more personal interaction you have with the voters and the citizens, the better for the campaign. So you try to do as much of it yourself as you can, as opposed to just handing it off to a staff, correct?
Well, I have always said that being in local government, and especially in the city of Sunrise, you know, you're the closest to the people. When someone flushes their toilet, as I say, it's my responsibility to make sure that it goes somewhere. You know, it's a dirty job, but somebody's got to do it.
There you go. And do you get correspondence from citizens of some of the most minor, menial little things want now and then? Or do citizens try to go directly to you about complaints? A lot of times, that just makes you roll your eyes once in a while. I mean.
I've been asked a lot of things. Matter of fact, just recently, a friend of mine, his girlfriend's grandmother was actually in a nursing home. She was going to pass away, and they couldn't find a priest to give her last rites.
Oh, wow.
And so I got a call on a Saturday night out at dinner with my wife, and they called me and they said, you know, we can't find someone to give her last rites. So, immediately I started, getting into my mode of being in the community. And the first thing I thought about is call the emergency room. So I called the emergency room at one of the hospitals, and I said, I need the name of a priest in order to call them and ask them if they would give last rites. And I started calling through my network of friends, and I found somebody who actually was connected with one of our churches. And ultimately, we actually left the dinner and went over to the nursing home about 11:30, and I got a call from the priest at All Saints Catholic Church in Sunrise, and he asked me what was going on. I told him, and then I put him on the phone with the granddaughter, and she explained, and he was in there with like 20 minutes.
Wow.
And then within about 25 minutes, we were all standing around the bed giving her last rites. And so that was one of the first times I've ever been asked for that. But I've been asked many, many things, whether it's traffic or whether it's a dog missing, but that's my responsibility. And I take it very seriously because, one thing I have is a lot of history in the city of Sunrise, as you know.
And, yes, you do. And we're going to get into that.
Yeah, and I know, I pretty much know every inch of the city of Sunrise. So it's my responsibility to be able to, when the call comes out, that I can make a phone call to either staff and ask them to solve a problem. For example, I'm driving up my road and I notice that there's new graffiti on the wall there. So my first call was to the police chief so we can get one of our detectives out there to figure out whether this is a gang graffiti that put it up there or maybe it's just somebody who just had some free time and they wanted to just do something wrong. So, it's those type of things that I know I can make the phone calls and get things done.
Now, I'm sure that personal attention to matters like that goes a long, long way with the citizens and the voters, but I know you're not doing it just for that. I know, I can tell you're a very compassionate person and you do take these things personally. And being close to the police chief, like you said you are, it makes it a lot easier to get things like that done, and it's good to just be able to make a phone call, and you don't have to go through a bunch of red tape to get something like that graffiti taken care of.
Well, I hate red tape, and I think we all do. I mean, we're so used to calling companies and push one, push two, push three,
right.
You know, getting your prescriptions done. There's no more personal attention. I believe that local government needs to be able to provide that that personal attention. And again, another story, I got an email from a resident down on the east side of Sunrise telling me that they've had break-ins, like 7 of them recently. And so I asked her, I texted her back and I said, do me a favor, here's my phone number, call me. She called me. I got on the phone. I called the chief, told him what was going on. He actually went out there with one of our sergeants. They visited the lady, told her what the story was. I went by there, matter of fact, right after they had been there, and we kind of set a game plan. And guess what? I was leaving one of the churches that I was visiting that Sunday morning. This was on a Saturday, Sunday morning. And I went over to the substation, and I walked in there. One of our officers was, like, panting. He was, like, out of breath. I said, what's going on? He says, well, we just arrested somebody burglarizing a house right around the corner from this woman.
Wow.
So within less than 24 hours, we actually made an arrest. And we believe he's the perpetrator that actually broke into these homes.
Wow.
And it wouldn't happen unless she got a hold of me. And then I responded in kind, be able to deal with it. So
you certainly don't discourage that kind of thing then?
Absolutely not. I mean, like I said, I mean, my job, my goal is to make my city the best city that you could ever live in. And by the way, we've been ranked the third best place to raise your children by Newsweek magazine recently.
Wow.
And so they recognize all the great things that are happening in our community.
That's awesome, man. Congratulations for that. Are you happy with the way things are going in the city? Are there things that you wish you could get done that you can't get done? Have you come across that? Can you give me an example of something like that?
Probably one of the biggest problems that I have is dealing with getting people to get permits to be able to build, whether you're a resident that's doing a pool or putting in shutters, or you're just doing an expansion onto your house, or whether you're a large corporation or a little corporation, trying to get through that. Because what's happened over the years, because of the hurricanes and the type of weather we have down here, the codes have changed and they've become very stringent.
Yeah.
And so what's happened is that even though we have a bad economy now and there's less development going on, the rules are still
in place
for rather large projects and projects. So my biggest concern is that it takes too long to get through the process. You know, I'm the kind of guy that I'm a hands-on guy. I want something to be done pretty quickly. And I've always said that the time it takes someone to come to us and get approval for a project, the quicker they can put the project into the ground, number one, is it pulls in revenues from the construction. It creates jobs, which
right.
we're all trying to do.
Sure.
And number three, it's going to bring in revenue in taxes, because once that building is built and it gets a CO, now it's now considered a valuable piece of property. So that's probably of all the things that's out there. That's probably it. And also the heat. You know, if I could change the temperature on some days when it's in the hundreds, you know, but I'm having trouble trying to do that. But sooner or later, I think if I'm in office long enough, I might be able to hopefully put a dome over the city of Sunrise.
No, you do realize you have no control over that.
I know. Funny story about, Blockbuster. I remember hearing some story about the owners of Blockbuster were hiring all these planes so they could go out and see the clouds to cause more rain, because the more rain there is, more people are going to rent videos to stay in their homes.
No.
So it was like the most amazing thing. And I'm like thinking, wait a second, they're going to start seeding the clouds, cause more rain. Then I got to deal with flooding issues.
Right.
I got to deal with overflowed canals.
Now, that wasn't just a myth. That was actually...
I don't know.
You don't know to this day.
I'm sure it was probably one of those little tales that someone wanted to say.
Urban legend, if you will.
Urban legend, yeah. So
we're getting into the history, but I guess we're sort of working backwards. You said local government. You haven't always been in local government. I know you were a representative for the state at one point. That's a pretty prestigious position to be in.
Well, my local government started in 1987.
Okay. Well, let's go back to that.
All right. 1987, I ran for the city council. We weren't called commissioners because we were a strong mayor, former government back then. And I ran in 1987, got first elected to the Sunrise City Commission. And subsequently, I got reelected all the way through 1999. And then there was an opening on the State House of Representatives that represents Sunrise Plantation and Weston. And I decided that I wanted to go go on further with my political career. So I ran for that seat in 2000. I won.
Wow.
And I got reelected in 2000. And then 2004, I finally realized that my calling was on the local level. So I came back home to run for county commissioner. And I did run, but unfortunately, I didn't win that race. But it also brought me back home, and it gave me the opportunity to come back to Sunrise.
I'm sure the frustration of not being able to get things done was tenfold at the state level that it is in local, right? Did you talk about red tape, right?
Well, it is, but I'll tell you this. You know, I was very fortunate because, you know, I developed a relationship with across the party lines, and that's our biggest problem today in this country is,
amen,
is that we're everyone's fighting for their own little turf based on their designation of their party affiliation. And, you know, not to digress, but
I could spend an hour on that. Well, go ahead.
But my answer is real simple. If you're a Democrat, but you also a conservative, a fiscal conservative, which I am, by the way, I'm a Democrat, fiscal conservative, I think I'm more like a Dem-Rem, and that's what my party affiliation should be, Dem-Rem. Now, if you're a Republican, but you also have social responsibilities and you care about helping people out, then you could be called a Rem-Dem. So you got the Dem-Rems and the Rem-Dems. And that would put both the parties together, and we would solve the problems of this country. Our country is in serious trouble right now because we're fighting, and what we've done is we've outsourced so many things to foreign countries that now we're realizing all those things we offshored or all the products that now are being built.
We've created our own unemployment.
Absolutely. I mean, I was talking to my son the other day. He told me there was like 400 million iPads that were sold or manufactured. Can you imagine? I mean, if we manufactured the iPads here in America, not only the screens, but the inside, the guts, the batteries, all that.
And we could. Here. It's not like we can't.
And we design this stuff. We create we invented solar power. And I was listening today. They were talking about all the solar power panels are now being made in China. We came 7 years ago. There were no solar panels. I heard today that were being built in China. Not one solar panel. 7 years later, now they're producing all the solar panels that come to America, or the majority of them. And that's where our problem is. Our problem is that we forgot what it's like to be in the manufacturing business. We're such a buyer.
That's what the country
consumer.
Was built on, right?
It was built on that. When I forgot, during the the Olympics that they had in China, which was the last Olympics, they were talking about, I believe, 1975, going back to 75, when I graduated high school, as a matter of fact. That year, they imported from China for the whole year the same amount that we import almost every single day from China.
Wow.
And that came out during when the Olympics were there. They were talking about, imagine every single day, and the same amount in 1975 was being imported here into America. It's a pretty scary thought, but now we're seeing the results of all that. And so
why aren't there the voices of reason that you're obviously showing right now at the highest levels in the government, national government, the United States government? Why isn't there more of this reasoning that level?
I can having the experience.
You're not
of being
afraid
local,
to say the real reasons why,
no,
right?
No, and you can't, because you know what? My neighbors are losing their homes. My neighbors are losing their jobs. My friends are losing their jobs. It's about the people that are around us. We have friends and neighbors and children that are over fighting in a war over there against the Taliban and others, and they're putting their lives on the line while we're here enjoying the fruits of the fighting that they're doing, and they're putting their lives and their families are suffering from them. But the answer is this, is having the ability of going to Tallahassee showed me who's in control, and it's really not the elected officials. It's the people that are hired by companies and organizations, and I'm not talking about charitable organizations. I'm talking about corporations that are out there that are really manipulating the bills and all the things that get through there because they have the interest. And the problem is that our system is so much built on having a relationship with lobbyists and people that are in that. And now, there's nothing wrong with that because I've always said lobbyists will give you another view and another side of the issue.
We'll help the debate.
It helps it. It's an information thing. But you should never be in a situation where you're voting strictly on those issues and policies because they're doing fundraisers for you and other things. I have no problem taking money for fundraising because that's unfortunately the system we have. And that is, you've got to get the message out to the people. And in a lot of cases, and we're seeing right now, the more money you have, and you could be a nobody, you could end up going to the top of the ticket or the top of the polls. But that's another problem because it's the regular people, that need to be represented. And I'll give you my formula. When I got into politics in 1987, and by the way, I was involved before that, I made a decision that I was tired of people making decisions for me that forgot what it was like to be someone like me.
Right.
Whether I was an employee and then I started my own company.
Happens in business all the time, too.
And that's the problem. People get into politics and they get elected and they forget what it's like to be someone who's raising a family.
They detach
themselves.
Putting
their kids through college. Right. They're literally somewhere else. That's why local government is so important. It gets back to it. That I walk out my door and I see my neighbors, the people that are in Washington, Tallahassee, or wherever they're at in some state or federal government, they don't walk out of their houses and see their neighbors. They don't see people with for sale signs in front of their houses because they're somewhere else. They're not there. But when I walk out and drive down the street and I see the moving trucks and I see that there's no for sale sign, I know what that is. Chances are they've been foreclosed on. And that's another issue. We've got to get our financial institutions to start working with people. We can't just let them get bailed out.
Right.
And while we're being thrown out, and that's what's happening right now. Our government, unfortunately, has taken care of Wall Street, which is fine, but Main Street, and everybody talks about it, it's like energy, it's like solar power, it's all the things that we talk about, but there needs to be a movement. There needs to be, the people need to rise up and start working on these issues.
Do you feel, because I know I do you sense something on the horizon with the advent of technology, excuse me, and the ability for people to communicate at this level between each other? Okay, I know it's not a huge example, but I'm doing this show independently and not part of a corporation that owns a radio station that I'm working for. So I have my own voice and my own way to get it out to people. There's social networking avenues and ways. Are you sensing that over the next decade or so that people will actually be able to speak out more and have their own voice and change things like this in the future?
You know, there's good and bad. Here's the problem. A lot of meetings are held what we call technology town hall meetings. So you don't get to go in front of 100 people and really see their faces and listen to them and listen to their stories. You know, there's no real connect.
It's not face to face.
It's not face to face. You can't hear those stories and really appreciate what people are going through when they lose their health insurance and their child is sick or something like that.
Right. Let's talk about Sunrise and more local fun things. I know you're a big hockey fan. I've seen you at a lot of the hockey games, and I want to get into this. And I do want to get back into the politics, because now I didn't realize that you really have so much to say, and it's fascinating. And we'll probably extend this show a little longer than normal to get more of it out of you. But you have a lot of intimate knowledge about the Panthers moving from Miami to Sunrise, and it was a big thing that happened for them to get a National Hockey League team, and I know it's something that you're very proud of. Talk a little bit about that history.
Well, you know, they started in Miami. They started the Miami Arena.
With their offices in Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah, well, Wayne Huizenga, obviously brought the franchise here to South Florida, the first hockey team ever. And, you know, that he was down in Miami, and so, obviously, that arena got old and got, you know, there was issues of finance. And also
it was time to move.
Right. It was time to move. So a lot of cities went after the arena. And we had, obviously, there was a lot of great things about the city of Sunrise. Our infrastructure was in place. We had the land. They didn't have to clear anything out. So we were able to, work out the best deal for Huizenga to bring the Panthers to Sunrise, and it's been a great relationship.
And to this day, it's still holding up as one of the greatest arenas in the country and in the league. I mean, it's I talk to hockey fans all the time from around the country that visit the Bank Atlantic Center, and they just have a great time there, and they love the building, and it's all held up in an era that, you know, every 5-10 years the buildings become outdated. So they did a really good job in building that. Now, were you part of that? Were you part of the infrastructure in Sunrise when that happened? And did it almost not happen?
Oh, it almost didn't happen. But one thing I got to tell you, there's an old saying in real estate, three things you need in real estate: location, location, location.
Right.
We had the location, location, location.
Well, I think there's some people that would debate that point, that it's so far out west. I mean, I'm not even that far out west, and people go, you're not driving all the way out there. You live out in the boondocks. So, I mean, was that a concern?
Not really, because remember, we have Sawgrass Expressway, 595. We've got all the road. And again, it's all about infrastructure.
Right. It's easy to get out here. People stop complaining about that.
You know what the great thing about it is? Someone can come from Marco Island or Naples and be here in 2.5 hours, and they could be at a hockey game, and they could be home.
Less than that from Naples, right?
So it's all about that we have the infrastructure in place, the highways, but we also have the ability that you can get in and out of there. I mean, our rule of thumb is quite simple. that parking lot at the end of a game or any type of event concert is to be cleared within 45 minutes. Now, you try that at a Dolphin game. Try getting out of there in 45 minutes.
Or a Jets or Giants game.
I can tell you there's really only one way to do it, and that is get in a golf cart from there and go out to the helipad and get on a helicopter and fly out. You'll get out of there in 45
minutes. Is that you that leaves the game in a helicopter every night?
No. All right. Actually, you know, it's funny. I'm a Cowboy fan.
So am I. Beautiful. Yeah. And I lived in Dallas for a while and had season tickets and ended up at the Super Bowl in Super Bowl 27.
And I didn't live there. Actually, I saw the Super Bowl in Miami that they had between the Pittsburgh Steelers and Cowboys.
Excellent.
And I saw Roger Staubach, and that was, I said, no, Roger Staubach.
Right.
And so I said,
oh, okay, 77, yeah, 8.
Right. We're going way back because I was born and raised on Miami Beach. I could tell you stories. I used to be a newspaper boy on there. I used to sell the Sun Reporter. I sold the Miami Herald on Saturday night.
Wow.
For Sunday, the Sunday Miami Herald in front of Pumpernick's on Collins Avenue.
Larry King's old hangout.
That's what it was. Back then, you had the Carol on the Dovell. You had, you know, Jackie Gleason was, you know, had his show down on Miami Beach. But, you know, the reason why I...
Well, have you been to the new Cowboys Jerry Land out
there? I have not.
I have. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I can imagine. I went to the playoff games between the Giants and the Cowboys that we got blown out of.
Right.
For whatever reason. There was too much popcorn in T.O.'s helmet, I think. You know, it was all about... But, you know, we worked very hard. And it's a great relationship that the arena has with the city, because what's happened is it's fostered development around it. And as you know... Within a stone's throw, or I should say maybe a 9-iron, maybe an 8-iron for some people.
Well, probably a 7 for me.
You could hit from the parking lot of the arena. You could hit the world's largest outlet mall. By the way, it is the world's largest outlet
mall. The Sawgrass Mills Mall.
It is. And the reason why everyone says the Mall of the Americas is the world's largest, it's not. The reason being why it's bigger is because it has Nickelodeon. It has the entertainment component as part of its square footage. Sawgrass Mills Mall is the world's largest outlet mall retail. Retail-wise, there is no games, there's nothing there, but pure sales and restaurants.
And more, and even as recently in the last 2 years, they built more little sections to it. Beautiful, beautiful areas. It just continues to grow. So I think things are alive and well at the Sawgrass Mills Mall.
I can tell you that Colonnades, that's the area you're talking about.
Exactly.
They've submitted to add another 25,000 square feet onto that area there.
Makes you say, what recession, right?
Well, I still think there's a recession in America, but the one thing you'll notice if you ever go there, you're going to notice there's a lot of people, thank God for the South Americans that come to the Sawgrass Mills Mall, because a lot of them can't find these kind of goods and products and quality of goods in other areas. And that's why, listen, there's a super mall down in Miami called the Dolphin Mall. And it's not as big as ours, but there's something about Sawgrass Mills Mall that brings a lot of people there.
All right, on that subject then, this would be a good time to bring up this. Where do you stand on immigration laws and reform?
Well, I don't think people coming to America to shop are considered immigrants.
All right. Well, okay. I wasn't implying that, but the people that work there may fall under the category.
I think if we had a robust economy and are working and there was a lot of jobs available, I don't think anyone would be questioning why people are coming to America to find jobs. I think because of the problems that we're having right now with our economy is driving people from those countries that also don't have the ability to work, and they see America as an opportunity to be able to find work. Our biggest problem that sometimes we have is there's jobs available, but certain people don't want to take those jobs because they just don't feel that it's within their realm. And the other thing is...
But they're okay with sitting at home collecting unemployment.
And it's funny you bring that. I was talking to the manager for a large dealership across the country about a month ago. He told me that a customer came in up in one of their stores up north, and went in and picked the vehicle that they wanted and did it and then went in to negotiate the deal, and they got the contract and they wrote it all up, and they said, now you got to go talk to financing, you know, fill out your applications. And he filled out his application and he wrote down his employer as the United States government. And so they looked at it and said, so what do you do for the government? He says, well, I'm on unemployment. The federal government pays me unemployment. He literally felt that his job was unemployment because he'd been on it so long that it's just – and that's the other sad part about what's going on.
Did they at least reject him for not being on it long enough?
I think once he found out that it wasn't a real job.
Wow.
And that's another problem.
That's just as mind-boggling.
People, unfortunately, until they go back to work, they're relying upon unemployment because they still have to pay their bills. They still have to put food on their tables. And we need to turn it around. You know,
I just think the sentence when they make the statement, but that there are jobs that Americans just won't do, and then they move on to their next sentence. And you need to stop there and just tackle that problem. I mean, where, I mean, who, what gives them the right to say that the job is below them and that, you know?
It's not until they fill those jobs, but I'll give you a perfect example. In the city of Sunrise, we've brought in a lot of really good corporations and a lot of small ones and big ones. But one of them is RIM, and that's Research in Motion. And they're a fantastic company, and they create the BlackBerry. They are the owners of BlackBerry.
Wow.
And I went, and they invited me there to do a tour of their facility.
That had to be fascinating.
It was absolutely fascinating. And you know what I found out? That the new BlackBerry, I think it's the 52-something, was actually created and designed right here in the city of Sunrise.
Wow.
Right here, less than
a block away
from my house, that BlackBerry that people have across the world was created right here.
Wow.
And I said, so where do we manufacture this BlackBerry?
No, don't tell
me.
Do
we do it right behind here? Because we've got a manufacturing area we can actually do. And he says to me, no, we make them in Mexico. And I said, what do you mean you make them in Mexico? He says, we cannot make them here in America because it costs 35% more to manufacture them there. And I'm thinking to myself, here in America, and I'm thinking to myself, that's where our problem is.
Right.
Our problem is that we need to close that gap and bring that, if it's 35% more to make it here in America versus making it in Mexico and creating jobs in foreign countries, why can't we close that gap and be able to bring
An endless debate about whether, you know, free enterprise entitles them to, you know, have the most margin of profit as they possibly can by outsourcing. So do you restrict those rules and make sure that it has to be manufactured in the States, even though if it may result in less profit? So, I mean,
I don't think it's a troubling debate. No, but I don't think there should be any mandates. But what we need to do is close the gap of why it costs 35% more here in America than it is to make it in Mexico.
That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, that's what we need to look at. And what would we rather have? Unemployment out of control? Would we rather have a major recession, or would we rather bring those jobs? And that's another thing. A lot of people made a lot of money. Like I tell people, you know, we need to find the magic bullet to turn this economy around. And what was the magic bullet that created this economic boom that made people millionaires overnight? It was the internet. Think about it. The internet, exactly what we're doing right now.
Right.
We're utilizing the internet, and that is the technology that allowed you to connect with people across this world, whether you wanted to buy pencils or whether you want to buy a car.
Or put on your own radio show.
Or put on a radio show like you're doing. So this created. Now, guess what? There's no internet magic bullet. We ran out of bullets, basically. So we need to find the next thing that's going to do that. And I truly believe it's energy.
So go back for a second. What do you mean the magic bullet is no longer there? Are you saying that the opportunities to become a millionaire overnight on the internet have run out?
I think it's much more difficult because you got to have a buyer on the other side.
Sure.
Remember, it's supply and demand. So if you don't have people that have money to buy the products, then there's no way you're going to sell them on the internet. So
it's
a catch-22. People
exactly.
have to have that money. But we need that next thing, and I truly believe it's energy. And what happened in the Gulf is exactly proof that we need to look towards truly being energy independent. We need to get off foreign oil. We need to stop using the fossil fuels. We need to start using solar. We need to start using the natural resources that are right here, not only in Florida, but across the country.
We need to. But this goes back to what you said earlier. Let's use solar energy as an example. Solar energy makes so much sense. But we know that the corporations of the oil companies and their control is going to prevent that.
Well,
so how do we stop that?
Quite simply, the federal government is the largest purchaser of products and goods and services. If the federal government decided that they were going to now make their buildings more solar, more panels, more energy efficient, and that would create the jobs, that would create the manufacturing jobs.
But they're
jobs.
Not because the oil companies got them under their thumb.
But again, who's got them under the thumb? Who's controlling that? We go back to who's controlling what the policymakers are deciding. And it goes back to, you just said, the oil companies. Well, there you go. There's the problem. We need to have a commitment that we're going to do the right thing.
And well, unless we have people running the oil companies that believe in that, that won't do that sort of crooked practice, then it's not going to happen.
Well, it's not so much the oil companies, it's the electrical companies. Florida Power and Light is now building a huge solar project here in Florida.
Are they really?
Yes.
Oh, that's very promising. So I guess there is hope for the future if, as long as individuals start speaking out in the very reasonable way that you are, that maybe things can turn around. I mean, I really want to be optimistic about everything, but are you feeling? I've been asking every time I have anybody in the financial industry or insurance or real estate, I try to get a gauge from them on whether they feel a turnaround in the. And I'm getting the idea from what we've said so far in this interview that you're not feeling like there's a big light at the end of the tunnel anytime soon. What is your read on the economy? Has the upswing started yet, or are we still spiraling down?
I think we're still in a spiral right now. And again, it's based on people going back to work. Until we see unemployment stabilize and not continue to rise, there'll be new numbers out tomorrow that are going to show that there's more people that are filing, because what's happened now is all those people that the federal government hired for the census taking are now back on the unemployment rolls, and now they're applying for unemployment. So until we create the jobs, that is the manufacturing and their service, installation, and repair side, we have to start making those jobs. Like I told when I went to Washington to meet with the Obama administration, I met with the Department of Energy and others. I said, the people that I represent in the city of Sunrise and the vast majority of the people that live in South Florida don't make roads. They don't build roads. So why are we pumping so much money into projects to build roads when most of that money doesn't help the local economies? Yeah, it builds roads, but the problem is it doesn't put money back in the pockets of the economy.
Because we're not the ones building the roads.
We're not the ones that are building the roads. I don't have a lot of people that drive steamrollers or lay asphalt that live in the city of Sunrise. Most of the people that live in my community, which is, you know, is the vast majority, are people that work in some kind of supportive or management position or some kind of retail. Aside.
Wow, we're talking to Roger Wishner, the mayor of the city of Sunrise, Florida. It's one of the, since we're worldwide and a lot of people are listening from outside of the area, I'm sure they're hearing what you're saying and wish that they could vote for you, but if they're not a resident, they can't do that. Boy, that mint that you had is not treating you well, is it?
No, you know what? I don't know. You know, I meet and come across so many people that unfortunately you...
You're constantly talking and the throat must just get worn out, right?
Yeah, it does. And then, you know, you try to take a break and then you call me and say, hey, listen, come over. Let's do it.
Another half an hour of talking. And now I'm extending it another few minutes.
Yeah.
Let's get back to the campaign. What is election time coming up? Is it right around the corner?
August 24th.
August. Wow, that's that soon.
That soon. Actually, people start to get to vote now because they've got their absentee ballots.
I'm even more flattered that you're here amidst all this whirlwind that you're in right now. What are your day-to-day duties as far as... All right, let's put it this way. I know I sort of asked this question before. What percentage of your day is devoted to the campaign and what percentage of your day is devoted to day-to-day mayoral activities?
Well, remember, we're not a strong mayor former government, so I'm actually not in management. So I'm basically... we have a city manager that runs a city, but you know, I have to deal with the issues like the person who had the problem with the crime or something like that. So there's a, you know, I spend probably, I would say mostly about 25 to 30 hours a week doing city work. And then we have city commission meetings that are, you know, every other week, which last about 5 to 6 hours. Sometimes you got to prepare for them and you have to study over the weekend for the agenda that you're working on. So sometimes you put in quite a bit of time.
I even heard you say earlier today that you're out yourself putting up signs, campaign signs yourself. You know, I'm sure you have people doing that for you, but you're even taking the time to do it yourself.
Oh yeah, you know, I'm a hands-on type of person, and so
literally,
you know, and I know where to put the signs.
So, right?
You know,
city like the back of your hand.
Yeah. Here's some signs. Go put them up, and they'll all end up in one place most likely. But you know, because I know the locations, I know where the most traffic is, I know where the most amount of residents drive, so I pretty much can spot out the locations. But I have people that volunteer to help me. But, you know, and we'll go pull him down after the election's over. And, but yeah, August 24th is the election. And you know, this will be, I think, my ninth election that I've been involved in,
okay.
Whether it's local or state.
So it's not as stressful as it used to be for you. You've kind of been through this before.
Actually, I think it's more stressful because as you get older, I think it takes a little bit more of a toll on you.
Because you have to have a plan B in the back of your head in case, because you know, your future is pretty much undetermined at this point.
Well, I think it's determined, you know, based on the relationship I have with my community and based on the people that when I knock on doors and they know, they tell me, you know, that you're doing a great job. We just got a survey and that showed that 92% of the residents are either feel that our leisure services, and that's parks and recreation programs, are either excellent or good, 92%. And that basically says that we're doing things right. And I take it back to the same thing I tell people all the time. The other day I was at Home Depot, and I was walking through, and I was at the checkout line, and this gentleman, one of the sales reps wearing his orange apron, looked over and saw my name, and he says to me, "Let me ask you, Mayor, why should I vote for you?" And I looked at him and I said, "What's your name?" And he says, "Tim." And I said, "Tim, do you like living in the city of Sunrise?" And he says, "Yes, I do." Then there's your answer. The answer is, if you're happy and satisfied with what you have, then why would you change something?
Right.
Because we can only get better. We can always go backwards, but my solution is never to go backwards. Always get better. Always make your community better for people to live, because you need new people to come in after people move out. So you want to have that ability for him to say, "Tim," when a relative calls or a friend and they say, "Listen, we're coming down to Florida. Where should we move?" And I want Tim and the rest of the people of Sunrise to say, "Come to Sunrise, because it's a great community."
I want to move there right now so I can vote for you.
Yeah. So, I mean, well, I've got too many people living in the house right now for that. But it's really all about enjoying where you live. And if you like where you live, then really the way you express that is to go to the ballot box and say, "You know what, the people that are here that are doing a good job, that make me feel happy about being here, I want to keep them in office. I want to keep this direction going." And let me tell you, we're a great city. We're so diverse, as a matter of fact. The other day we celebrated Jamaican Flag Day, and not in the city of Sunrise, but I was there to give a proclamation, and they had the General Council of Jamaica there. And Jamaica's a great island. If you've never been there, I encourage
you.
You know, it's so peaceful and everything. I'm looking forward to going there after this election, as a matter of fact.
Nice. That'd be a great place to celebrate.
But we have such a great diverse community. It's not just one section, type of segment of population, because we got retirees, or what I call active adults.
Nice.
The active adults, we've got a lot of those living in Sunrise. We've got a lot of working people with great families. We got great schools. We also have a great multicultural community.
Yeah.
Not only Jamaican people, people from Haiti, people from all over live in the city of Sunrise. And like I said to them, that's what
And they all enjoy themselves there.
And that's what makes it great, because, I can get in my car, and you can get in your car, and you could drive somewhere to have Jamaican food. You could go and have any type of culture food that you want. And that's what a great community is where you can actually go, and it's not just the same old food, but you could actually experience what people that live in Jamaica eat at the same time while it's right in your backyard.
And a National Hockey League team, and the largest outlet mall in the country.
Yes.
And the third most...
In the world, actually. Sawgrass Mills Mall.
In the world. Sorry.
Yeah.
And the third most enjoyable place to live, according to Newsweek?
Ranked the third best place to raise your kids.
Okay. Which says a lot about the schools here, too.
It's schools. It's about the public safety. It's all about, how children are raised. And having two children, it's so important that not only I protect their education, their future, because they both go to public school. And it's so important that I make sure, and I've said this when I was in the legislature, there's not one child that deserves to have a lesser, better education than any child anywhere in the state of Florida. It doesn't matter where you live. The education opportunities should be across the board for every single child, because that is our future. These kids and what they learn and how their commitment to education is so important. But I'll tell you this.
We need somebody like you in the White House.
Well, I don't know about that. I had one. It's funny that you say that. One time in my life, I thought about maybe trying to do that. But then I thought about, I can do such a better job
right
here. And you know what?
It's like you said earlier. It's more accomplished day to day on the local level.
I can drive down the street and I can see the park that I helped. I can see the arena I remember when I stood on that piece of property, and it was
groundbreaking.
Purely dirt. I remember my first son. Well, I could hold him in my arm, and he literally from my fingertips to my elbow. That was his size.
And now he's going to the games.
And he was wearing one of those onesie things, and I was holding my arm when we did the groundbreaking for the Bank Atlantic Center. Back then, it was actually the National Car rental center.
Yep.
And so
it's had many names, but Bank Atlantic Center is going to stick for a while, I'm sure.
I mean, I remember when we had Sunrise Musical Theater. And
everybody misses that place,
Yeah, I saw Frank Sinatra there.
Oh, I can't even tell you the amount of shows we saw there. And one of the greatest sounding rooms ever.
It was one of the best. But you want to know a funny story going back in
history. How did that go away, by the way? Quick story on that.
Quite simply, you had the Hard Rock and you had the Bank Atlantic Center get built, and it literally just, you know, got these other places. You know, when the Hard Rock got built, it really, you know, they started
turning
down. That
was the nail in the coffin.
And also, you had the Miami Arena, you had the American Airlines Arena. Sure. All these arenas went up, and they kind of, like, took all those acts.
Sad.
But not only that, but a lot of the acts that are out there today won't play in a small venue like that. So they need to have that larger, but not as huge as, obviously, the Bank Atlantic Center. But I remember a funny story I heard when I came to Sunrise, that Frank Sinatra every year would come and play at the Sunrise Musical Theater. And John Lamello, which was basically the original mayor of the city of Sunrise, was very charismatic, and he really enjoyed, you know, being the mayor of Sunrise.
Charismatic.
And I remember I heard the story where he sent a limousine to pick up Frank Sinatra at the airport. And Frank Sinatra comes out of the airport with his entourage, and he walks out and he says, "I'm not getting in that car." They said, "Well, why aren't you?" "Because I'm not getting in a hearse." Now, what it was is it was a converted ambulance, the first ambulance of the city of Sunrise. He converted into a limousine.
Ugh.
So it looked like a hearse. And Frank Sinatra said, "I am not getting in that hearse." Because he just said, "That's it, man. I'm out. You know, get something else for me." And I remember meeting Henny Youngman, who used to play there, you know, with his fiddle. And there's such great history in the city of Sunrise. We were talking earlier.
I saw Frank Zappa there.
Donna Summer.
Van Morrison there.
The Doobie Brothers. Chicago. I mean, all the Earth, Wind, and Fire. I mean, you name it, they were all there.
Oh, yeah, Earth, Wind, and Fire. That was epic.
Yeah,
awesome.
There was just some incredible. But you know, it's funny about the city of Sunrise, and I encourage your listeners to do this, and we talked about this earlier before we got on air, is I want you to Google, as I told you, Google upside down house in the city of Sunrise, Florida, or just upside down house.
Anybody Sunrise. That just Google this.
Just
this
Google
is fascinating.
This was the only built that anybody knows of, the only built upside down house, literally, where you'll see the picture where the car is literally on the what you would call the roof, but it's actually the floor of the carport that's there. All the furniture was literally up on the what we call now the roof if we walk into a regular house. But they use that for a marketing tool, and that's how they got people to come to Sunrise, Florida. You remember, it was all about
this
come by
been in
swamp
what year?
Land.
What year was this?
Oh, you're talking about the 80s.
Okay.
You're talking about the 80s. In the city of Sunrise.
Surprised that I've never seen it because I was here then. And
it was literally, you know, back in those days, they were literally selling swampland. As a matter of fact, where the Bank Atlantic Center is and where the Sawgrass Mills Mall is, that all used to be just farmland and wetlands. And I remember where I live now, the actual Sunrise was the location for horses that had that there's a flu or some kind of virus that they have, some kind of equine virus. All the horses in Florida used to be put there because they had to stay a certain distance from other horses because it was it was an airborne virus.
So they were sequestered in Sunrise.
Exactly. So I remember when they were building the mall, we actually went there and volunteered to round up the horses because they could run free, but they would come and eat when they put the food out. And I remember we were moving them from site to site as projects were being built in Western Sunrise.
Wow. This is amazing. The history that you have, I mean... Here's what we're going to do. I wish you the best in this election. I want to be following it closely. If I can help you put up some signs, I'd be happy to do that for you, even being a plantation resident. If you live in Sunrise, obviously you've heard Roger's words have spoken for him, and you know you want to get out there and vote for him. If you're listening to this show from anywhere outside of Sunrise and you know somebody that does live, please forward them the link to this show so they can hear Roger's words. And we want to get these votes for you because I want to see you get reelected because we need more people like you in government. You're very forthright. You're very compassionate. Very real, and it's a relief to know that we actually have people in places of government, in government positions that feel the way you do. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity. And listen, I want to tell you, it's so funny because sometimes I'll see you at the game and we'll look at each other or we'll get in the elevator.
Oh, about the team.
What's going on with our team? And I know you're passionate about that.
Well, everybody asks me like I have the answers, but you know, and I really don't. I'm as big a fan as anybody out there. I mean, I actually kind of do have the answers, but I keep them to myself.
Yeah, but you know, listen, we you know, on behalf of being a fan of the Florida Panthers and hearing your announcements during the games and the lineups and all the things, you're doing a great job there, and I hope you a lot of success. Continue.
Well, thanks.
You know, so you can be like some of these guys that retire literally,
right.
As announcers.
I want to be like
teams.
Bob Shepard and die in the announcer like that. You know what I mean? I mean, not to talk about myself, but I would think that, I mean, you can hear, when you hear my announcements, you could just kind of tell how big of a fan I am, right? Is that, yeah. Does that come across?
Oh, it is.
Sometimes I think to myself, wow, was I too much of a homer on that? I don't know.
Well, so. You know what my favorite line is? Panthers!
And then the other thing is, let's clear this up now. Any opportunity that I can get, the answer is goal. Not some people are still saying score.
Score, yeah.
I know. And I say we got to put a graphic up on the scoreboard that says goal, because if everybody was saying goal simultaneously, it would sound even that much better, but it's still a lot of fun.
You're right. I mean, I think I probably yell score.
See? You're admitting it. That's great. Roger Wishner, wish you the best luck in the reelection. And if, you know, once you get reelected and you get back in and more progress happens in Sunrise, I want you to come back and talk more about it. This is great.
Love to.
Go out and vote for him. We've got contact information for the city on the page here, so if you need to get in touch with the mayor or any of his folks, please do so. Tune in again tomorrow for another half hour or more interview right here.
Log on each weekday for another edition of The Bill Murphy Show at BillMurphyShow.com. If you'd like to be a guest, send an email to Murph@BillMurphyShow.com. That's MURPH@BillMurphyShow.com. A Murphonics Media Production.